Opening narration.
The Icatra Foundation presents the Icatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Icatra AI. What truly makes a genius is it some innate, untouchable gift? A spark that only a few ever experience? Or is it something more? Well, human, something we can learn from. That's the really intriguing question we're tackling today. We're taking a deep dive into the life of maybe history's most celebrated polymath, Leonardo da Vinci. And our guide for this is Walter Isaacson's fantastic biography. He spent years, literally years, lost in Leonardo's thousands of notebook pages. Isaacson, who's also written about, titans like Steve Jobs and Einstein, gives us this incredible window into Leonardo's mind. So our mission today isn't just to stand back and admire the masterpieces, the Mona Lisa, the Last Supper, but to really unpack what Isaacson found, not just what Leonardo did, but how he thought, what drove that boundless creativity. We want to get beyond the paintings and understand the habits of mind that made him so extraordinary and maybe see how those principles could spark something in your own life.
The chronological journey in part four, core philosophy and values.
Okay, let's get into it. Isaacson's main point kind of challenges that whole idea of Leonardo having some sort of supernatural talent. He argues it was more down to earth. So if it wasn't magic, what was the secret to his genius, according to Isaacson's deep dive?
Well, what Isaacson lays out is that it wasn't mystical at all. It really came down to an absolutely insatiable curiosity about everything. And coupled with that, a relentless, almost obsessive observation of the world around him.
Okay.
But maybe the key part was his ability to just blur the lines, between art, science, engineering. He didn't see them as separate boxes.
Right.
His genius came from questioning everything and thinking across those categories. He wasn't confined.
That blurring boundaries idea is fascinating. And his notebooks, they're famous for this, aren't they? Just full of what look like random thoughts, but they're actually profound.
Oh, totally. I mean, imagine a to-do list that says, describe the tongue of the woodpecker.
Seriously. Wow.
Or calculate the measurement of Milan and its suburbs. It shows he wasn't just after the big ideas, but every single tiny detail.
Yeah, that's what's so striking. Every little thing mattered.
Exactly. He really believed that understanding one small piece could help you understand the whole universe in a way. It wasn't just looking, it was understanding. And you see this in his famous line, learning never exhausts the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And this connects directly to how he saw art and science. For him, they weren't separate things. They were like two sides of the same coin.
Right, feeding each other.
Absolutely. He felt everything connects to everything else. His studies of anatomy, how light works, how water flows, that directly informed his painting.
And the painting probably sparked scientific questions, too.
Precisely. And the Vitruvian Man. Well, that's the perfect symbol, isn't it? Art, science, humanity, all perfectly balanced and connected.
It's clear this way of thinking didn't just pop up overnight. So what about his early life? What were the influences that shaped this unique mind?
Well, his early years were pretty unconventional, and Isaacson makes a strong case that this was actually crucial, Leonardo being born illegitimate. Paradoxically, that might have been an advantage.
How so?
It freed him from expectations. Like, he wasn't pressured to become a notary like his father. He could pursue a craft, art. Plus, growing up in the countryside gave him this deep love of nature and, really importantly, this habit of direct observation. Watching things himself.
Instead of just reading about them.
Exactly. So he was largely self-taught, which made him more likely to question what authorities said. He trusted his own eyes first, an outsider from the get-go.
Okay, so you can already see that independent streak. Then at 14, he goes to Florence, to Andrea del Verrocchio's workshop. That sounds like a big step.
Oh, huge. Verrocchio's workshop wasn't just an art studio. It was like a Renaissance hub, a real melting pot.
So more than just painting.
Definitely. He learned painting, sculpture, sure, but also metallurgy, engineering, chemistry. It was all happening there.
Wow.
And that's where his talent really started to show. There's that famous story about the angel he painted in Verrocchio's Baptism of Christ.
The one that made Verrocchio quit painting.
That's the one. Apparently, it was just so much better. But that whole environment where art and science and craft all mixed together, that deeply shaped Leonardo's approach for his entire life.
Incredible start. So after Florence, where did he go? What came next?
After his apprenticeship, he headed to Milan, spent nearly two decades working for Duke Ludovico Sforza. And this was an incredibly productive time. He wasn't just the court painter. He was designing military equipment, inventions, even staging these elaborate pageants.
Was he guy?
Very. And this is when he created the Last Supper. It's revolutionary, right? The composition, the psychological depth in the apostles' faces, just stunning.
Absolutely. But wasn't there an issue with the paint?
Ah, yes, that's the other side of the coin. It also shows his experimental side, sometimes getting ahead of practicality. He tried a new fresco technique, sort of an oil temper mix on dry plaster.
And it didn't hold up well.
Sadly, no. It started deteriorating pretty quickly. So it perfectly shows that tension in him, amazing innovation, but sometimes the execution or the materials couldn't quite keep up with his ideas.
So even his triumphs had these hiccups, built-in lessons. And this Milan period, this is also where the notebooks really take off, right?
Oh, absolutely. They just explode during this time, full of incredibly detailed anatomical studies. He was dissecting human bodies, which was pretty controversial then, to understand exactly how everything worked.
Wow. Drawing muscles, bones.
Everything. Nerves, organs. Alongside sketches, you find notes on optics, how water moves, designs for flying machines, war machines, all jumbled together in his unique mirror writing.
Amazing. Just this whirlwind of observation and ideas.
It was a deep, deep dive into how the world and life itself actually functioned.
So after Milan, things changed. Isaacson talks about him being more of a wanderer for a while.
That's right. Politics shifted in Milan. Sforza fell from power, and Leonardo had to adapt. He became nomadic again for a time.
And he even worked for Cesar Borgia. He doesn't exactly sound like an art patron.
No, not exactly known for his gentle nature. But Leonardo worked for him briefly as a military engineer and cartographer. He created these incredibly detailed, modern-looking maps for Borgia's campaigns. It just shows his practicality, his skill in observation applied to a totally different, very real-world problem. He could solve problems wherever he was.
Okay, but then he returns to Florence. And this leads us to probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa.
Indeed. Around 1503, he starts work on it, and what Isaacson reveals is fascinating. It wasn't just commissioned portrait, it became like his personal obsession, a lifelong laboratory.
He carried it around with him for years.
Yes, for years. He never really declared it finished. He kept refining it, tinkering with it. He used all that anatomical knowledge for her smile, studying the muscles around the lips and eyes to get that subtle, enigmatic quality.
And the famous filmato technique.
Exactly, that blurring of lines, the smoky effect. He used that to create ambiguity, a sense of movement, making her expression seem to change.
So it wasn't just painting a face.
Not at all. For Leonardo, it was an exploration. Human emotion, optics, how light falls, the mystery of the soul itself. It's all wrapped up in that one painting. He poured everything he was learning into it.
It's amazing to think of it as this ongoing experiment. What about his final years? Did he find some peace?
He did, thankfully. His last years were spent in France under the patronage of King Francis VI. It seems he was treated with great reverence there. He had the time and freedom to organize his huge collection of notebooks, pulling together decades of thought. And he continued refining his favorite paintings, like the Mona Lisa, right up until the end. A life of constant learning.
Three pivotal turning points integrated above in part six. Human lessons and reflection.
Okay, let's zoom in a bit on some of the core themes that Isaacson highlights, the things that really defined his genius. One idea that really jumped out at me was saper vidire. Knowing how to see. Can you unpack that a little?
Yeah, saber vidire. For Leonardo, this was fundamental. It wasn't just passive looking. It was active, intense observation, almost like interrogating reality.
Just not just glancing.
No. He wouldn't just glance at a river. He'd study the swirling eddies, try to figure out the physics of the currents. He wouldn't just see faces in a crowd. He'd analyze the fleeting expressions, trying to understand the emotions behind them. He deeply believed, and he wrote, "The eye is the principal means by which understanding may most fully appreciate the infinite works of nature."
Wow.
It was deliberate practice, seeing deeply to understand.
So it really emphasizes trusting your own experience, your own eyes, over just accepting what you're told. That feels very relevant today, doesn't it?
Absolutely. He actually declared, "Experience is the only source of true knowledge." That was him rejecting the dominant way of thinking then, which relied heavily on ancient texts and authorities.
Right, the scholastic tradition.
Exactly. He was basically saying, forget that. I'm going to look for myself. I'll test it. I'll observe it directly, which was pretty radical for his time.
Okay, but this brings up something Isaacson tackles head on. All those unfinished projects. We know the masterpieces, but Leonardo left a lot incomplete. How do we square that with his genius? Was it a flaw?
It's a great question. Isaacson argues that his perfectionism and what looks like procrastination were actually intertwined with his creative process. They weren't necessarily flaws.
How does that work?
Well, because his curiosity never stopped, he was always discovering new things, a new scientific insight, maybe a better way to depict light.
Ah, so he wanted to incorporate the new stuff.
Precisely. So a work was never truly finished because he was never finished learning. He allowed ideas to simmer, to evolve, to deepen as he gained more knowledge.
The Mona Lisa being the prime example again.
The ultimate example. 16 years of refinement wasn't an accident, it was his method. Letting the painting evolve with his understanding. You could call it productive procrastination, letting things mature.
That's a great way to put it. Not a flaw, but a method. I also found the point about him being an outsider really compelling. Illegitimate, left-handed, maybe gay, self-taught. How did being a misfit help him?
That's a powerful idea, Isaacson explores. That outsider status, paradoxically, gave him immense freedom.
Freedom from what?
Freedom from conventional thinking, from academic dogma, from societal expectations. He wasn't bound by the usual rules. So while other artists followed strict guidelines for, say, religious paintings, Leonardo felt free to experiment radically, like with the Last Supper's technique, or to dissect bodies for anatomical truth when it was frowned upon.
Because he wasn't part of the establishment anyway.
Exactly. His perspective wasn't constrained. It allowed him to challenge assumptions in art and science in a way someone more embedded in the system might not have dared. He saw things differently.
It's like his lack of formal belonging gave him the freedom to belong entirely to his own observations. And he wasn't always chasing definite answers, was he? Isaacson mentions his comfort with ambiguity.
That's another key insight. Unlike so many people who want clear, black and white answers, Leonardo seemed perfectly comfortable with uncertainty, with mystery.
You see that in the art.
Definitely. The sfumato technique itself, that blurring, that smokiness, it creates ambiguity. The Mona Lisa's smile changes depending on how you look. It reflects his understanding that reality isn't sharp lines and neat categories. It's complex, shifting, full of nuance.
He presents questions, not just answers.
Precisely. In his art and his notebooks, he embraced the complexity.
And even his more fantastical ideas, like flying machines. They weren't just daydreams, were they? They were grounded in study.
Absolutely grounded. His imagination was incredible, sure, designing flying machines, robotic lions,
Oh.
but it was always underpinned by meticulous observation and solid engineering principles.
He's studying birds.
Exactly. His designs for flying machines came directly from his detailed studies of bird wings, bird flight, air currents. He wasn't just wishing humans could fly. He was trying to engineer it based on how nature already did it, making the fantastical real through science.
Three final takeaways.
So bringing this all together, what does Leonardo's life mean for us, living centuries later? His approach feels surprisingly modern. What are the big takeaways from Isaacson's deep dive that we can actually use?
Isaacson really frames Leonardo's life as, well, almost a guide to living creatively. If we had to boil it down to three key insights, maybe the first is an emotional insight. Embrace relentless, childlike curiosity about everything.
Like the woodpecker's gun?
Exactly. Ask why about the mundane. Don't just accept the world as it is. Question it with genuine wonder. That joy of discovery seems central to who he was.
Okay, an emotional embrace of curiosity. What about intellectually?
I think the big intellectual insight is the power of blurring boundaries. Don't stay in your silo. See the connections.
Connect the dots.
Connect the dots. Read outside your field. Look for analogies. Leonardo showed that innovation thrives at the intersection of disciplines. Art informed his science, science informed his art. That cross-pollination is incredibly powerful.
Makes sense. And finally, a universal lesson, something practical for anyone.
Perhaps the most universal insight is the practice of sapere videre, knowing how to truly see. Cultivate deep observation.
Pay attention.
Really pay attention. Notice the details others miss. Trust your own eyes and experiences over received wisdom. Treat mistakes not as failures, but as data points, opportunities to learn more, just like Leonardo did with his experiments. That active engagement with reality is something anyone can practice.
Clothing narration.
That's incredibly inspiring. Genius, not as magic, but as a way of engaging with the world. Thank you for that deep dive.
A pleasure. His life offers so much.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.